The Guardian.
Francis Bacon. You might think of the Pope, mouth open in a silent scream, trapped in a glass enclosure. You might think of eviscerated flesh. You might just think of Soho and low life and drinking and London. But Francis Bacon, the great London artist of the 20th century, who died in 1992, was regarded in his own lifetime as a master. I'm Jonathan Jones. We're at Tate Britain, and we're about to go into Tate Britain's big exhibition of the autumn, which is the first really full-scale retrospective of Bacon's art since his death. And this is the moment when the 21st century looks very hard at the art of one of the most famous painters of the 20th century and says, is he really one of the masters? Is he really an artist that influences artists today? Is he an artist we're going to be looking at in 50 years' time, 100 years' time? Is he going to endure this century, this millennium? Let's find out. First thing that's caught my eye is a man going through a shower curtain. It's Study for the Human Body, 1949. And power of the human form was a great obsession of Bacon. That's why he never painted abstract art. He's a figurative painter. He was interested in the human figure and the human face. He did terrible violence to those things. But here, actually, you have a very, if you like, it's probably as straight and as simple as Bacon gets as a painter of the human form. It's a man seen from behind, naked, going through a grey shower curtain. But what a painting. What a painter. The quality of the richness and kind of velvety, the texture of the painting, of the flesh, the man's kind of pink, pale flesh against the grey curtain. It's at once sensual and it's soft and hard. Also, the monumentality of the pose, the power of the pose. He's really massive, this guy. There's something really powerful about him. There's something like a Michelangelo statue about him. And yet there's also a roughness to it and a kind of rawness to it that is utterly kind of modern. The combination of all those things, the combination of the high and the low, the immediate and the being totally steeped in the great traditions of Western art, from whether it's oil painting, Titian. I mean, there's a quality of Titian's oil immediately, I think, that you see if you're familiar with Titian. And yet also classical statuary and just his own desires and his own longings and his own anger, his own loneliness. It hits you straight away, all of this at the same time. This is really the first painting I've seen coming into the exhibition, and I'm stunned by it. As we move on, I can see popes and I can see men screaming and flesh disintegrating beneath umbrellas, chimpanzees. We're now in the second room of the show, which has got some of Bacon's grandest early works, some of his most famous images of popes. Bacon became obsessed with the image of the Pope. He wasn't a religious man. He was Irish, though, or he grew up in Ireland. A little bit of biographical introduction. We'll step back a little bit. Francis Bacon was descended from the English Renaissance philosopher and scientist Francis Bacon. In other words, he came from quite a good stock. He got very little education. His father apparently didn't bother to educate him, and this is how he told the story anyway. He ended up in London, and he moved in gay circles in London. He had various sort of men who supported him and helped him. He tried to be an interior designer. When you look at Bacon's, in fact, I'm looking now, there's a painting in this room which has this kind of amazing, bizarre, curling piece of furniture. It's a figure that's like straddling this tubular metal furniture. And Bacon often has, it's, in fact, it's, you know, one of his tropes that he has this bizarre modernist furniture in his paintings. But then he taught himself to paint. But these works here, I mean, Bacon, he emerged anyway after the war as a remarkable painter. He was recognised as being pretty extraordinary. His imagination was very, very distinctive, and he became obsessed with the figure of the Pope. He got the figure of the Pope not by looking at popes, but by looking at a painting, the portrait of Innocent X by Velázquez, one of his favourite painters. And what I'm looking at now is one of the popes that Bacon painted in homage. It's called Study After Pope Innocent X by Velázquez, painted in 1951. It's a hell of a picture. the Pope is, he's got this purple robes on. He's going to, his hat, and maybe this is significant, but his face is very stretched and long, and he's got his beretta on, and it's very tall, which is a bit phallic, and maybe Bacon's teasing out something which you get in these old portraits of popes. They are pictures of power, male power, but again, it's the texture of the paint, really. In all of these paintings, what really stuns me is the texture of the paint, the feeling of the paint. You know, this thing that it's so velvety and yet it's so dry as well. There are these white strokes. I mean, I'm looking at just a white stroke of paint on the man's, basically suggesting the man's legs and his white sort of white cloth, white robes that he would have on. And there's just this one stroke, and he's just done one long stroke, and it's touched the canvas. It's left a white mark, but it hasn't. If you were, you know, a normal painter would go back and do several more strokes in order to create the line, but Bacon has just left that one line there, and it's pale at the beginning, and then it goes very, it clusters into a great sort of cloudy, a kind of powdery cloudiness. There's something he leaves textures which are once which are often very dry looking, and yet which are not dry in any kind of academic sense, which are at the same time very fleeting and yet utterly powerful. And it's as if it's an effect which is remarkable. Anyway, we've only got to room two of the exhibition. I think perhaps we should make some progress. Although in some sense, my impression of the exhibition is that in a way Bacon's the same right through. I used to have a stick of rock that Tracy Emin had made as a ready-made, which was a stick of Margate rock with her name on. And then, you know, it's like the thing of she's the same right through, like a stick of Margate rock. But and it actually, it's not even a narrative exhibition, this, because it looks at Bacon by theme. We've actually come now into the room which is dedicated to Bacon and the Crucifixion. Bacon was an atheist, and I don't just mean, you know, he didn't believe in God, but he very explicitly didn't believe in God. He talked about it. There's even a story where he was once at dinner with the poet Auden, W.H. Auden, who had turned to God later in life. And Bacon got up in the middle of the meal and said, "I'm not listening to this Christian rubbish, this offensive Christian rubbish." But the Crucifixion was one of his great themes. This room includes a painting that brought him kicking and screaming, like this prodigious birth into the world of art in the late 1940s. It's dated circa 1944. It's called Three Studies for Figures at the Base of a Crucifixion. It was shown in London just after the war and created a tremendous impact. And it's horrible. It's horrible and great. In fact, the way he later spoke about them, they're not just figures at the base of the crucifixion, they're also the Eumenides, the horrible punishing fates from Greek tragedy that was one of his obsessions. But basically they're like gargoyles, they have heads, they have mouths, they don't necessarily have anything else. They have stunted limbs, torsos that are just lumps. One is blindfolded, one turns away from us, one doesn't appear to have any eyes. Their teeth and torsos, really. Just saying it makes me shudder a little bit. It was painted during the Second World War, shown after the Second World War. Nobody had any doubt that this was a painting of the human condition after the Holocaust, after the Nazis. In a way, when you look at them, they just seem like a final statement. But they're the first paintings that Bacon made, was, you know, really made an impact with, and they're the beginning of his career. There are three figures, there are also three paintings, a triptych. But I'm turning now to a much later triptych that he did, another crucifixion. It's just called Crucifixion, and it's dated 1965. And it's one of his most famous later crucifixions, and a work that was always kind of created a controversy about whether Bacon is a political artist, because it involves figures with Nazi armbands. In the middle, there's this body. Is it a pig? Is it a man? Is it a pig man? Is it... what is it? And we haven't really discussed the theme of evisceration in Bacon's art. He starts to kind of take apart bodies on canvas. And it's, you know, Picasso had done that, but it's very totally different from Picasso. It's not done in the interests of perception. It's done willfully. It's done a kind of horrible rage. And the kind of the crucified body, as it were, here is part of it is human with sort of splintered legs, which look like, but then the feet look like fists. But then that seems to have been kind of compressed and splattered into an eviscerated animal carcass that's hanging up. The details just lead you into a world of butchery, really. And it's on a tremendous scale, this is huge. So as we're walking through this tremendous and hugely impressive exhibition, I've just noticed Sir Nicholas Sirota, the director of Tate, so perhaps we could ask him what he thinks.
I think the achievement of this show is that it really presents Bacon in the raw with the kind of sense of frisson. You don't really sense it with so many people in the room now, but coming in on Friday, I was really struck by the fact that somehow, so many of the Bacon images have become very familiar that their ability to surprise or shock us has somehow diminished with time. But here you come in the show and you look at each individual painting and you're really struck by the kind of raw power that one would have felt in the 1950s and early 60s in seeing those works. So I think it's an incredibly fresh show. Feels like a young artist. And he feels like an artist who has still, there's so much to mine in it from the point of view of artists. I mean, obviously Damien Hirst is a great admirer, but he doesn't have followers, Bacon. He certainly has admirers, and there are people who have taken bits out of Bacon, but my goodness me, this is a man whose work is going to live and live and live, in my view.
I love these paintings when he was interested in Van Gogh's. There was a lost Van Gogh. Van Gogh did a painting, it was, a painting of himself going into the wheat fields. Bacon did versions of this painting. We're looking at one now, Study for Portrait of Van Gogh 7. But the colours in it, I mean, one of the things about Bacon is colour. His colours are just so surprising. And there's so many artists who make a career by being good at colour. Bacon didn't. He made a career by being good at content and good at the figure and, you know, horrifying. But actually, his use of colour is just so beautiful and strange. I mean, in this Van Gogh picture, for example, and there's this red ground, this kind of really bold red against green, and kind of becomes a kind of bloody purple folded into the wood and the trees. And then you've got the coarse, very coarse, tough yellow of Van Gogh's hat. And he must have really loved Van Gogh because there's such a passion for Van Gogh's colours here, the sort of shock of colour. I suppose there's the idea that colour can be shocking. We're now standing in front of Bacon's portrait of Isabel Rawsthorne standing in a street in Soho, painted in 1967, height of pop art, actually, but not. Bacon clearly wasn't a pop artist. He's done terrible things to this woman's face. I mean, this is someone he said that he found beautiful, and he's butchered her face. He's created it. He's turned it into a mask. Actually, looking at it now, it's slightly reminiscent of the masks of Picasso's Demoiselle d'Avignon, the kind of African masks. And she's wearing this black dress, but it's really glamorous. And he really does capture glamour. I mean, I guess this is his great monument to the glamour of Soho and the glamour of the seedy bohemian world that he was part of. But it's a wonderful portrait. I mean, he's a wonderful portraitist, because even when he does terribly violent things to people, he gets a tremendous sense. There's a tremendous sense of dignity in them as well. Admiration that he can express in a portrait. Actually, moving over towards another portrait now. Study of George Dyer in a Mirror, 1968. George Dyer was one of his lover. I mean, this is a disturbing picture, disturbing portrait, because this man's face, basically, what he appears to have done, sat George Dyer in a chair, and he's in his suit, and he's smoking, but then he's basically sliced off his face and put it on a kind of mirror in front of him, which, I mean, literally, his own face seems to have been blown off, and its fragments are assembled in front of him for him, for us to look at, and him to look at, which is the most... unusual effect. By doing that to his face, of course, he makes you really see his face. Layers to the textures in this. I mean, again, there's a carpet which is all dappled, a lovely sort of dappled, almost Monet effect on the carpet. Shadows. I think Bacon's shadows are some of the most greatest ever painted. We're now coming into another great room. This is called Memorial, and it's dedicated to memorial, to memory. Actually, what it's dedicated to is the death of George Dyer and Bacon's response to it. and triptych May-June 1973. What happened was that George Dyer eventually committed suicide in the hotel where he was staying with Bacon in Paris for Bacon's big retrospective at the Grand Palais in Paris. The paintings in here are all really meditating on the violent death of George Dyer. There's a man, he's on the toilet, he's meditating on the toilet, is he contemplating suicide? There's vomiting blood into a sink. What makes the picture so strange is the way that the body is kind of compressed. The body is very squat. You don't see the whole body anyway. It's almost going back to that. In his figures for the base of crucifixion, Bacon showed bodies as just kind of stumps, and then he gets very aware of the power of the body and the beauty of the body. And what you have here is a muscular, heroic, nude male body, like almost like a Michelangelo kind of body, but squashed up, really squashed up, because he's on the toilet and he's all squashed up in this little space, because we're looking at him through a door. And in the middle one, which is the weirdest effect of all, there's this shadow that comes out, and it's like a big bat. And you just look at that shadow and the black that's seeping out. It's like it's literally seeping out of the darkness. I think there's a sense in which if you stand looking at these paintings long enough, which isn't very long at all, we just haven't been here very long at all, but I'm already starting to feel sucked into this story, sucked into this guy's despair, and it's not very nice. I think we should move on. Scary. Well, we're coming to the end of our tour now. In fact, we're in the room which is actually called Late. It's Late Bacon. We're looking at a painting here called Blood on Pavement, painted in 1988, which, for those of you who are steeped in the history of contemporary British art, that is, of course, it's 20 years ago, and it was the year of Damien Hirst's curated the exhibition Frieze. What were the old masters, what were the old guys doing in that year? Well, Francis Bacon was painting Blood on a Pavement, a patch of blood on a pavement, and it's really incredible. I mean, you know, the painters that Bacon admired, Velazquez, Titian, you know, he set himself to be an old master. He was this kind of self-taught Soho, bohemian, gambler. I think really the truth is he belongs in that company. He's going to be revered and remembered down the centuries. He's one of the great artists. I say the great artists actually at this point, not great painters, because for all the textures and wonders of the paint in this exhibition, there is also a tremendous imagination. The imagination in the sense of inventing images, inventing myths, if you like. This whole world, these monsters and the narrative milieu that he invents, which is kind of something that you can see, but you couldn't enter these rooms in which terrible things are happening all the time. And a mythic imagination on the scale of the way someone like Titian painted Greek myth. But it all comes down for him to a patch of blood on the pavement. He believed that we are just meat. And the blood is painted with a sort of viscous quality, a kind of the shininess, the viscosity, the freshness of it, I suppose. Now, the man's a bloody genius. I mean, I'm honest to God, the way I feel about Bacon now, and it's just hit me with this exhibition, it's a tremendous exhibition, actually. It's a really good showing of his work. I think that he emerges as one of the greatest artists, one of the greatest painters of the 20th century, and an artist that everybody should think about very hard and you know, I think he's one of the masters.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.